Hey, 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 what's going on, Podcast Nation? It's Jason Harris here, and thank you for joining me another episode of The Drive. Today, I have a very special guest. I have Mike Martinez from Dealer on. Mike, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Super excited. this is Dealer on's 20th year.
That is crazy cool.
We are celebrating our 23rd. So excited. New products, new partnerships.
Yeah.
Company's been, it's just amazing to see how it's grown. I've been there now for almost 7 years. And I think we've almost 5X'd the company we were when I started.
Yeah. Wow. It's, you know what? Business is like this. They're your children. In some cases, they may spend more time with them than the other one. But I'm curious. I like kicking off these podcasts actually with little origin stories, right? I'd love to hear just how people just found their way into automotive.
Yep.
And then B, I love to hear, from your guys' company perspective of like, what was that kind of like aha moment? You're like, hey, that's a problem and we need to go solve it, But let's start off with you, Mike. How did you get started in this crazy little world we call the automotive industry?
Absolutely. So I came through the path of technology.
Okay.
I was, one of those kids who got excited about computers way back. My first computer was a Commodore VIC-20.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that
mine was a 64, but you're even
ages me a little bit. Yeah. And I started learning how to program it because I thought it was really cool. I could control these things on the screen, and I got really into Geek Alert. I got really into Lord of the Rings, and I wanted to create that world.
Okay.
And so I figured the only way I could, I figured, I can do this on a computer. And so I started, I got a TRS-80.
Nice.
And started programming in TRS-80 assembler, just ones and zeros.
There you go.
And from there, moved on and figured out, okay, I'm not going to be a software developer. I'm not that good at it. It's not how I'm going to learn my living. And then I spent 7 years at Microsoft on the product side. So I have worked on a number of the products that you probably love and hate today. Print, Preview, and Excel, that was me. And then from there, went to started really my startup career.
Yeah.
joined a small company in customer relationship management way back in client server days.
Fun.
And that was then acquired by Lucent Technology, which is a big technology company at the time, part of Ma Bell.
Yep.
And got too big for me. It's 140,000 people, and I wasn't getting to know my customers, and I wasn't feeling like I was really contributing to the products. And a couple of friends had left and had gone to this startup company called the Cobalt Group.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with those guys. Yeah.
And they needed a marketing and a product guy.
Yeah.
And one of my friends said, hey, I know this guy. Let's talk to him. And that was it. I joined the Cobalt Group in 2000.
So that's how you got sucked into the auto world.
That's how I got sucked into the auto world.
You got bit by the bug.
Yep. Yep. So I was just thinking about it this morning. NADA 2000 was my first NADA. It was crazy town. Internet 1.0.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's super early stuff.
Everything was going to change. Yeah. People were spending so much money.
Everyone was going to buy cars online.
Everyone's going to buy cars online. dealers are going to be disintermediated. With Cobalt, I'm like, I don't feel that. I think like dealers are here to stay, and they provide like really important valued services to customers. And so I started building products for dealers. And, cool. Over time, I think I've probably been in 5,000 dealerships in my career.
Wow.
Because I did product and marketing at Cobalt, and then I moved over and took over sales. And so I had the Cobalt sales organization, and I spent 2 years.
So you've really seen over the last couple decades of just traveling, kind of how the industry is. You know what's funny? Because I've been in the industry about the same time as you have. And, it's so funny. I hear people talk, and it's like, yeah, I remember having that exact same conversation in 2002, like, this is going to happen. I'm like, well, it didn't happen 20 years ago. I don't know if it's going to happen now still, but so, it's funny to...
it is so cool. We introduced a product this week at NADA called Dealer On Signals.
Tina and Bill were just showing me this. Absolutely amazing.
It is the product I wanted to build 20 years ago at Cobalt Group, and we can now finally do it. We now finally have all the connective tissue. We have an ecosystem that if basically in retail technology today, dealers have a choice. Mm-hmm. Your choice is either buy into a closed wall garden,
yep,
which is sometimes also called a prison, and live with the technologies that are within the closed wall garden, which probably, you know, can work together pretty well.
Sure.
Or you follow an open standards approach, and you can put together all these cool technologies to do things that you haven't been able to do otherwise up till now. And that's what Signal is really all about, is this democratizing all of this client and consumer data.
All this behavioral data, personal, what I'm doing online, all the, yep.
And personalizing the website to the individual without having to trap you in a walled garden.
Look, this hyper-personalization, I think, impacts the customer experience in such a huge way. Like, Mike, I'm so curious, like, what was that aha moment of saying, because I know you said you've been like, this is what I wanted to build.
Yep.
20 years ago. Like, what was that moment of going, hey, look, there's a better way. There's a better experience here. It doesn't just have to be talking at them. We can talk to them.
Right.
Like,
so it was a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And Ali Amarasvani, our CEO, and Michael DeVito, our chief product officer, and I were sitting around talking, and some of our customers were leaving us because they wanted something called a single platform solution. Mm. And we're like, okay, what does this really mean? And when we started talking about it, we realized, okay, they're going in a direction where they're, you know, putting themselves inside the walled garden. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they really want. What they really want is best of breed solutions that can work together, that can create this hyper-personalized experience for the shopper and convert them at a better rate, mm-hmm. But without having to give up all of the vendors that they already know and love and trust. So instead, and we spent the last year and a half and a lot of investment in late night pizza, yeah, building this product that allows us to, create that experience and to leverage all of the vendors, mm-hmm. You know, because if you try, you know, one person's one person, one company is only as powerful as,
to your point, like the data right now, it's been sitting on all these multiple islands.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I got data in my DMS. I got data in my CRM. All kinds of different cookieless data and cookie data. Well, I guess no more. But, you know, all this data online from a behavioral perspective, that I have all the data coming off my website. Like, it's all these crazy little islands.
It's all out there, and all your agencies and all your vendors have data. And so let's hook it all together.
Yeah.
You know, let's enable this hyper-personalized experience by creating a web platform that allows email marketers, digital agencies, customer data platform, identity platforms, mm-hmm. to all participate and connect on the web where the customer is doing the shopping. Mm-hmm. And that was the idea of that led then to Signals, and now to our partnership with Full Throttle for Signals Experience Cloud.
That is very, very cool.
Yeah.
So let's actually dive in. Let's go a little more in kind of the product, right? Because I think, you know, what you guys have built, you know, some people, maybe just from the outside, just say that this is just a website solution, but it's a lot more than that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it is, you know, for me, and I've talked about this for many, many years, this is the first impression the consumer has of what it's going to be like to do business with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, if there's any more, is there anything more important than the first impression? And I'd love to kind of get your take on how we can, you know, enhance kind of that first impression.
So, you know, way back when I first started in this industry, you know, I'm working for a technology company and I'm a technology guy, good guy named Terry Smell, mm-hmm. I'm an old car guy, pulled me aside and said, here's the one thing you got to know, Mr. Technology Guy. The auto business is a person business. First, last, and always, it's a person business. And if you can find a way to make that technology feel personal to the individual, you can do some real good here. And so that's kind of always resonated with me. And with Signals, you know, particularly because it's an open platform,
yep,
we can connect to all those sources of data. So, you know, for example, you know, I'm looking, one of the things I think is super cool is we can work with anybody who's doing any kind of customer communication targeted to an individual.
Okay.
So, a service reminder program.
Sure.
Or a customer inequity program. We can provide them with the UTM code that they can attach to their email communications or their text messages and whatnot, yep. Send those to the customer. And then the customer, when they arrive at the dealer on website with Signals, that customer is going to get that personalized experience with the same creative, the same offer that is relevant to them and results in a much higher level of engagement and conversion for the dealer.
Well, sure.
And by leveraging all of those people, everybody gets to participate. It's not just the it's not just the company we acquired. It's everybody can participate and make this happen.
Yeah. Well, and really what you're doing is now you're creating kind of these partners that are really assisting. They're not just vendors anymore, right? You know, by connecting the dots together with you, then now we become a partner to create a better first experience, a better online experience.
Yep.
You know, I'm curious, you know, from where dealerships kind of sit right now. So let's say that we have some dealerships that are out there watching and listening right now. And, you know, they're like, okay, guys, hey, how's it going? You know, okay, you guys are talking about websites, you know, hyper-personally, that's not necessarily something. We have a lot of buzzwords in our mm-hmm. industry, right? Yep. And, you know, the concept of hyper-personalization exists in many, many verticals. This is pretty common, right? But it's just not something that we've seen in the automotive space. So give me kind of a quick example for people out there watching and listening of how that kind of plays out for the customer.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, Jeff Bezos, when early on, he said, you know, we don't want 5.4 million customers. We need to create a website for every single one of those customers and make it a personalized shopping mm-hmm. experience. Yep. We need 5.4 million websites. So when you think about how you interact with your customer, every single customer is different. And when they walk in your showroom, you spend a lot of time getting to know them.
Yes.
And you ask questions and you take feedback and you adjust your presentation to meet their needs. So you can help them understand that you're, you know, solving problems for them. Mm-hmm. That's what the signals technology does. It's just we leverage lots and lots of conversations, lots and lots of data to understand what's going on with this particular customer. And so that when they arrive at your website, they have that personalized experience that they can then that then hands off to your sales staff to, you know, finish out the deal and assist the customer.
Well, and look, I think for anybody out there watching and listening right now, you know, we've talked a lot about creating better experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is a decade old, you know, conversation, the experience. And here's what I find about the experience. It's never one big thing.
No.
You know what I mean? Because if it was, it'd be something like we just kind of quickly fix, you know, like, oh, you know, the experience sucks because there's a leak in the roof, you know, and it smells weird here, you know, like that would be something we would really fix quite quickly.
Yes.
But you know, really the consumers, you know, what they kind of determined to be a good experience, and we're consumers, we know like some of the best experiences we had, it was always the little things that made a big difference, mm-hmm. you know? And I think one of the biggest little things that you guys have addressed here is the little thing of being known. Like, hey, I know you.
Exactly.
I know something about you. And that feels warm and toasty, you know?
Well, and it's the expected experience now as a consumer that when I return and then go back to Amazon again, because I think they're the best example of this. When I return, the page is configured to the things that I have looked at and the questions I've asked of Amazon mm-hmm. Without requiring me to log in, without, you know, doing anything unusual. It's just I show up on their homepage and there it is. And it's my Amazon as opposed to whatever you experience.
Sure.
Same thing with Google. When you query on Google, you're going to get a different experience because you're a different person. Same should be for the shopper. And by the way, that's the expectation. That's the experience that customers have today that they expect to be available with every customer or every company that they're working with.
Yep.
You know, so as consumers, you know, and as dealers selling to consumers, the expectations it's not the guy down the street that's selling, you know, a different car than you. You're competing with the experience that's being created from all the providers across the customers day in and day out. And that has all become very personalized and without thinking about it and without putting artificial blocks in front of me of having to log in or, you know, do something special. It has to be natural.
Right. And it does. It makes a big difference. I mean, I think all the way back to like the way we order pizza now.
Yeah.
Like I go on my app mm-hmm. like, hey, Jason, this is what you ordered last time. You've ordered it a few times. You want to do the regular, you know?
Yep.
Hey, if not, here's a couple new products or new things. By the way,
you got some loyalty points here. And do you want the same salad you wanted last time? Shout out to Pagliacci Pizza Seattle, best app. But yeah, that's exactly the experience. I mean, and they can do that for a, you know, $45 pizza.
Yes.
We should be able to do this for a $45,000 car.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's literally what we're talking about here, is creating that type of experience. I mean, look, we're in Las Vegas. This is a city of experience.
Bling.
Right. Just everywhere you go, you know, like I was checking into my hotel. I've stayed at this hotel a few times, and I thought something was really interesting when I was filling out. They're like, you know, what car are you driving? And I'm like, well, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Right. So it was like, okay. And, you know, and then as I was getting here, and you could do the pre-check-in, so you can get the digital key and stuff like that. They asked me for my plate number. I was like, I don't know. I guess for parking, this just makes life easier. Right. I pulled up. They opened the door. Welcome back, Mr. Harris.
No way. That is powerful.
So
that is freaking,
and
powerful.
it took me almost a good couple hours after I checked in to figure out how the hell did they execute that. And I realized, you know, that when I was doing my pre-check-in, they asked for the plate number for parking. They, at some point when I pulled up, someone entered my plate number and it came up as Mr. Harris. They opened that door. It was Mr. Harris. I walked into the lobby. Welcome back, Mr. Harris. So they had radioed somebody in. I mean, talk about like,
that's impressive.
That was an experience, man. That was a wildly cool experience.
It makes me, it's people, process, technology.
Yeah.
So what's great is, you know, obviously their technology is working really well, but they've trained their people to be able to take advantage of that
beautiful
technology.
Process.
It is a beautiful process. It made me think a little bit about, I'm from Seattle. There's a restaurant, old style restaurant in Seattle called Camless.
Okay.
And one of the claims to fame from Camless is that you could pull up and it's valet parking and you get out of your car and you go into the restaurant and you have a fantastic meal. You get up, you know, you pay the bill, you get up. And by the time you walk to the door without talking to anybody, your car is right in front of you. And they've done this for 50 years.
Wow.
And it creates this amazing experience. And so through training and process, they figured it out. And now we can just leaven technology in there and make it even more powerful.
And that's pretty much what we're talking about here. It's kind of the same thing, right? You know, we have a great process when someone comes to our dealership. Like, this is the one thing, you know, from a process perspective, we don't seem to falter on, right? Like, you know, it's like someone comes to the dealership, we roll out that red carpet, right? You know, if they're here for service, we got their name on a big old board saying, welcome in. You know, it's like, we got this. But I think always in the past, the online experience hasn't really necessarily been in par with the in-dealership experience, but I'd love to get your thoughts.
No, I think that's completely and totally true. It's the, you know, two very different people go to the same dealer's website and receive exactly the same experience of the, you know, the information that we provide them. You know, we know that Jason is ready for service. Why are we spending time, or why aren't we spending some of that time helping Jason, you know, get to a service appointment faster? And by the way, since we know Jason and Jason's car and you know, information about you and where you are in your service intervals, preload that information without having to bother me. But instead you hit the website in most cases, and then you got to click on a bunch of stuff. It's just, it's silly.
Well, yeah. It's funny. I think there's actually more gates that I have to go through in the online experience these days now than I do when I actually show up to the dealership, right?
Yeah.
You know, so actually, you know what? That's a good segue. I like finding rabbit holes. So, and since I got you here, I got to ask you, right? As far as like CTAs on a website, because I just recently was doing some consulting with a dealer group, and holy CTAs. I counted 12. Like 12 different types of call to actions, and I don't know. Sometimes I sit on the fence, but Mike, I'd love to get your thoughts on
this. Okay, let's take this back to the customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, a lot of those CTAs are there because they're being driven by some application that's on the website. Some of those apps make really great sense and they deliver really great value. But what I'm here to tell you is that every one of those you put on your website, you are degrading the performance of your website and therefore the experience of your customer. Mm-hmm. Customers live and die by page speed times. They're not, you know, it used to be 2 seconds. It's now sub 1 second. And the more CTAs, the more things you load, you know, surveys and credit offers and blah, blah, blah that you load up onto your website, you are slowing the page down and you're creating a crappy customer experience. You know, we follow a pattern that every, you know, when we design a page, mm-hmm. we want to make sure that we are educating the customer, that we are putting calls to action visibly to them and in an attractive way, but not so many that you're cluttering the page.
Sure.
So there should always be a moment where wherever they're on the page, they have the ability to click into something to take action. But if you have this circus wagon design of chat popping up and, you know, all these other CTAs bouncing around the page and distracting the customer from the, you know, the critical business of interacting with your page and,
for sure.
and converting to a lead, you are working against yourself, both in terms of the performance of the website and therefore the customer experience, both from a speed perspective as well as from a visual perspective.
Yes.
And that's you're running counter to your experience. You know, you're running counter to your own best interests as the dealership. You know, it would be as if you kept locking doors in your dealership and you kept asking the customer,
it would be,
you know, put keep opening keys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, there's another door. No, yeah. No, wait. There's one more door.
Another door. Like, yeah, and it was supposed to be unlocked during business hours, but you put a lock in because you know, now you're forcing information from me. It's a terrible customer experience.
So. It is, and I think websites. You know, and I've had this conversation, I think, for many, 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 many years, right? Is from a dealership's perspective, is balancing out the need of the customer experience and the dealership's need for lead generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'd love to kind of get your thoughts.
Those are not separate, distinct things that are in some sort of.
They get treated pretty separately, though.
But they're not.
I hear you.
The experience leads to the conversion. And yes, there are tools and techniques that we can put in place that will help increase the conversion. We have lots of those at DealerOn.
Yep.
But they should all be working in concert to create a better shopping experience. Mm-hmm. So if you divorce yourself from the experience and think that, this by creating a bad experience, I'm somehow creating a better return on my internet investment, you're fooling yourself.
Yes.
You know, and in particular for the long term, because then you're, you know, the 98% of your customers go to your website. They go to the website far more frequently now than they go to any number of dealership stores.
Source of information, source of everything.
Like, you're damaging your brand.
Yes.
You know, you want that customer to buy 5, 6, 7, 8 cars from you. You want them to bring their car, but you know, their car back and service it with you. If you would know, creating that kind of weird experience online does to your brand what creating lots of doors to walk through in your dealership would do.
Yeah.
It just simply is irritating the customer and creating in their mind this terrible brand experience that, okay, now why would I do business with,
of course,
Mike Martinez Chevrolet? They're just terrible to work with, you know? So
it's almost a sign of disrespect. I mean, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It is not the hospitality and the people business that is the automotive industry. It's a misuse of technology.
Right. The website shouldn't have the intention to connect, not to just generate a person's name, email, address, and phone number.
Your website should be the best greeter you've ever had.
There we go, right?
Yeah.
Should be in the best greeters that you have. And, you know, when we talked a little bit about this earlier, it's that first impression. Okay, so now this is going to take me to a next conference, a topic that has been discussed many, many times, and many people live on the different sides of this. All right, I have my website from a branding perspective.
Uh-huh.
All right, I have two needs I need to fill, and always kind of seems to be a battle. There's the need of my manufacturer's branding requirements,
mm-hmm.
and then the need of, hey, I want to be unique
yep.
and be myself. Love to get your thoughts on how we balance that.
But then that's exactly the right word. It is a balance. Mm-hmm. It is a partnership, and some brands do a fantastic job of this. Other brands, I think there's opportunity for improvement. The customer's not buying the car from brand X.
Yes.
The customer's buying the car from the dealership. So therefore, the dealership has to have the ability to brand themselves, to express their uniqueness, to express mm-hmm. the, you know, why to buy from me, and in a way that is connected to the brand values of the vehicle that they're selling, to the experience that the shopper needs to have, both from the local hospitality of the dealership to the, you know, the feel of the wheels on the road
mm-hmm.
For the manufacturer. So it is a partnership. our industry is not always done super well in this. Sometimes a little friction between the partners. But at the end of the day, you know, it's the customer that pays the paychecks, both for yes. manufacturers and for the dealerships. And so therefore, we have to make sure that we are creating the experience between the brands that allows both parties to grow and be successful mm-hmm. while still making a great experience for the customer and giving them a reason to stick with the dealership and to stick with the brand.
Well, and it does make sense. And it is a balance. It is a balance, you know. Sometimes it balances way too much to one side versus the other.
Undoubtedly.
I was you know, recently on a dealership's website, and we was doing a little bit of consulting with them, and it looked like a circus. Yep. The amount of flashing lights and let's call them brand coloring all right. over
dumb,
the site.
Dumb pop-ups.
Oh my gosh!
Should
we get into the conversation of pop-ups? It feels like that could be a whole podcast in itself.
I think that probably could.
Pop up or not to pop up?
There's a right way to do it.
Okay, all right, all right. Explain to me the right way. I want to hear it.
Use artificial intelligence and technology to figure out. You know, a good time to put a pop-up is when a customer has not accomplished anything on your website and they're about to exit out.
Mm, yes,
that's a good time for a pop-up because there you can catch their attention and say, "Hey, by the way, you know, one more offer, and maybe you want to stick with me." So I think that's a great way to do it.
Sure.
To do it just when they hit the website and then you start popping pop-ups. No, that's a terrible way. You're creating a bad experience. So I think there's a good way to do pop-ups.
There is a good way to do pop-ups. Well, it makes sense. It's like, hey, just before you leave, you know, but definitely some dealerships I think can dial down.
I have seen dealerships that I kid you not, same site, two different chat companies.
Yes.
Two different digital retailing companies.
And they all make a noise. They all have a different noise.
And they all make noise. And which one of them, and they have completely different experience. So I'm having to get gated on one. So I have to give information. And the other one, I'm just getting price payment. And why are you doing that? And you're paying for both. And you have different chat agents and you have a different retail, you know, digital retailing. Apparently there's two or three people in your dealership that are buying things that don't talk together.
Yes.
And it's all showing up on your website.
It all shows on your website. Okay, so then I got a few more questions around the websites because I love talking websites. I really do. Like I've just
That's, you're, you know, you're sort of twisted that way, but I like that about you.
I am twisted that way. You know what? Look, I was one of my first, let's call it promotions. All right, was they gave me I was the director of internet operations and BDC.
Ah. Very cool.
And that's because they had no clue what the hell that actually meant, right? They were just like, you know this. You make a lot of phone calls and you talk to a lot of people. You're really good about developing appointments. And you know this whole internet thing, right? Because I was probably the youngest guy in the dealership. I was like, yeah, sure. I know something about this internet thing. Yeah, well, why not, right? I mean, I remember getting like our first dealer.com website, I think was, I want to say maybe it was 2000. Yeah, that's probably around. Okay. Maybe late 99 or, you know, 2000, something like that. You know, and it was just like, I loved it. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be able to connect to more people. Right. See, I saw the website not as like a digital brochure, but as a huge opportunity to connect to a much larger amount of people than I was ever going to connect to, you know, inside the dealership. I was looking at my 2,000-3,000 people. Oh my God. If I see 200-300 people in a month, that's insane. Not 2,000-3,000. Right. So I want to get into the conversation around content. Mm. All right. Because sometimes I see not enough. Sometimes I don't see, you know, like too much, mm-hmm. you know, where there's just overload. But I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on content on the site. What's enough? What's not enough? And what do we need to be focused on?
Well, enough versus not enough. I don't, you know, there's an argument there.
Yes.
But I don't think that's where you start. I think you start with content that is of interest to your customer, to your buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about automotive is we have lots and lots of content. I mean, we sell cool products.
Yes.
And there's and you know, they're also incredibly complex and technical and customers get lost in them. So there is a great opportunity to differentiate your website and therefore your customer experience by first starting with the content that matters to your customers.
Mm.
You know, car reviews, local connecting with your local community,
yeah,
and explaining how XYZ Chevrolet has just been working with the local kids, ball team, Go Raiders, and you know, how we partnered together and created a great experience for that community. That stuff is, you know, deep local content that brings them back.
Yes.
And it's interesting, if you look outside of the automotive industry and you look to other industries, there's a great examples to pull from, things like home services with, you know, improvement, sure, and home improvement, plumbing, electrical, legal, for example, mm-hmm, where you know, those industries have done a really fantastic job of building really relevant, mm-hmm, in-depth, genuine content with a voice from, you know, who is whatever business that they were representing, that really caused engagement.
No, I like this. And relevant content, you know, it's not content just for the sake of putting it up there so the search engines can pick it up. It is content that's relevant to my audience, right? So right. It's like, if your dealership out there and you're watching, you're listening right now, you know, it's like, it's not enough that you just post about, you know, how amazing the Tacoma is. Okay. No. Like everyone knows it's a badass truck. Okay. We get it. And in just duplicating the content from your manufacturer's site, that's not enough. But tell us why you think it's a badass
truck. How are you using the truck
in your market, right?
You and your family took a Tacoma out for camping this weekend. Talk to me about that.
Yeah.
You know, have
connection through content.
Have the lot porter talk about, you know, oh, when I'm washing this particular car, this is the curve of the bumper that I think is really cool. That really sets this car apart. Make it really, you know, really personal and relevant and interesting content. And don't, you know, content for content's sake. Too much, too little. You know, I think that's counting angels on the head of a pin.
Yeah.
But you know, looking at, you know, do you have a site full of content that no one ever looks at? That's the problem. You've created tons of pages that are loading down your site that no one's ever looking at, and you think you might be driving better search engine traffic because, oh, I have all this content. No one's looking at it, and therefore, when the search engine's indexed, they're just simply going to ignore those pages because no one's looking at that content. So mm-hmm. why would they give you any credit for it? So it's got to be content that's relevant, that drives attention, that drives action, and then therefore drives better positioning by the search engines when they index the page. So, you know, put some heart and soul in your content.
Yeah, actually, well, you kind of said earlier, it's making content for your audience.
Yeah.
I'm making content for the sake of doing it, but actually, you know, who is my audience? You know, who are we selling trucks to? You know, is most of our trucks getting sold to, you know, businesses and workers? Or are most of our trucks being sold to families? And if so, why are we not creating content about, you know, how you can use your truck to just, you know, have better family vacations? You know?
Or you have a big chunk of customers that are doing commercial.
Yeah.
And how can they get better utilization out of their truck? How can they get better mileage? How can they, keep the asset for longer? Those things are important to me if my business is based on the truck you sold me.
Well, and I think what's super key here is by, and now I take this kind of cool content that we just talked about, all right, and I combine it with a cool piece of technology like you guys have built, mm-hmm. right? Because now I'm collecting, you know, not just the fact that they're shopping for a truck, all right, but now I know they're shopping for a truck because they spent time reading an article why it's a great family vehicle.
And that then adds to the amount of data that we know about that particular customer.
Yes.
And the next time they come back, we can make it even more hyperlocal, because then it's like, oh, okay, they spent quite a bit of time looking at the Sequoia. Mm-hmm. They have a family. They have a need for a larger vehicle. Maybe they're into camping.
Yeah.
You know, we look at where they came from, where they went to, and we can use that information to make, you know, subsequent visits even more relevant and experiential to that customer.
Well, kind of keep them continuing to go down that content path,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah. So your content can really, you know, add to the customer's experience as we learn more and more about that customer.
Dude, I know I better stop because I love content. I can go down this path for a long time. But, and I know we're getting towards the tail end of our time today. But Mike, before I let you go, because this has been an awesome conversation, for everyone out there who's been watching and listening and would like to, you know, connect with you or connect with DealOn and learn more about, you know, this great, you know, hyper-personalized solution, this technology you guys have built, what's the easiest way to connect with you guys?
So easiest way is our website, DealOn.com. Or email sales@dealeron.com. Or if you'd like to connect with me, which a little questionable, but it's still cool. mmartinez@dealeron.com, and I'd be happy to get your emails and help you out.
Awesome. Mike, thank you so much, man. Jason, this has been a lot of fun.
I am so honored to be here, and thank you so much for the time.
This has been a blast. Thank you guys for watching. You guys have a great day.
See you, everybody.